Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On this week's program, I'd like to talk about the beast. If you remember your biblical prophecy, the Christians are in conflict with the beast. We're opposed to the beast. What is the beast a reference to? Well, not this beast, but the Revelation chapter 13 beast. Then I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads. And on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his head were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. The beast is mentioned 37 times in the book of the Revelation. Who is the beast? Well, the images used in the book of the Revelation are images laid down by the earlier biblical prophets. God hides the meaning of many of these images to those who are uncommitted readers of the Bible. It takes a degree of dedicated Bible study to piece together what the book of the Revelation is teaching. So, the reader of the book of the Revelation must be familiar with the previous prophecies, particularly the prophecies of Daniel, 700 years before the writing of the Revelation. Daniel receives a vision, an image of four beasts that will come upon the world. And the angelic messenger tells Daniel the exact meaning of these beasts. Daniel chapter 7, verse 17, "These great beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who will arise from the earth." Now, there are a number of truths to be revealed here. First, it's not just one beast, but many governments are being described as beasts. In the four beasts in Daniel's vision, the beast that looks like a lion refers to Babylon. The beast that looks like a bear refers to Persia. The beast that looks like a leopard refers to Greece. And the Roman Empire is that final nondescript beast with 10 horns. And in the book of the Revelation, we see what appears to be this fourth beast revived, re-energized. Revelation chapter 13, 3. "And I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and the fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast." And the beast of the Revelation is described as all four previous beasts combined. Revelation chapter 3, verse 2. "And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority." So it doesn't take a PhD in theology to figure out that God is describing the future government of man. But notice how it's being described as a cruel, irrational, soulless, vicious animal. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 12. "But these, as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of things that they understand not, and shall utterly perish in their own corruption." So this is mankind at the height of depravity. He goes about as an animal, no longer as a being made in the image of God. But you ask, well, didn't God establish government? Romans chapter 13. And is not government described as a minister of God to you for good? Well, that's true. God established government as a necessary evil to keep down evil. I mean, even the Chinese communist government imprisons drug pushers and sexual deviants. But whenever a government oversteps its bounds and no longer acts as an avenger, bringing wrath upon the one who practices evil, but becomes a persecutor of those who practice righteousness, then that government is in rebellion to God. It becomes a beast. Like the first Babylonian Empire, Genesis chapter 11, it overstepped its authorities. It sought to rule the world, but God confused the languages of the people and divided up the people, because God never intended for there to be one government ruling over the entire earth. You know, the power of man must not be consolidated but dispersed. Now, the odd thing about the Marxist statist big government movement in our day is that these leftists want more government, which seems kind of odd because government is established by God, and government means laws and rules. And we know that's one thing that the wicked do not want. They do not want authority. They want every man to be able to do what's right in his own eyes. But the government they want is not a God-centered, biblical, Christian law government. They want a godless government, one that will not enforce the law of God, but one that will protect them from the laws of God. They want a government of lawlessness. The Antichrist is called the man of lawlessness in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, yet he will be all about laws and rules. But they will be laws that force atheistic, immoral worldviews. They want a government that will protect their abortion, their gender deviance, their LGBTQ. And all of these behaviors have consequences. So they want a government that will relieve them of the consequences of their responsibility and accountability. They want a government that will save them from the consequences of their personal sin. They want a government that will force other people to pay for their salaries and entitlements. To quote one author, government even encourages immorality and sexual promiscuity. It is all part of the socialist modus operandi because dissolute, dysfunctional people who have crossed the moral line and thus become estranged from the law of God now need the God of the socialist state. So when we think about governments being the beast, we have to make the distinction between a godly Christian government and the government sought by the ungodly. They want a government that empowers them in their sin, not a government that empowers the righteous in the law of God. Now, a second truth in the book of Daniel is that in context, the kings and their kingdoms are used as synonyms. The beasts are four empires, but of course these empires are started and led by multiple kings. Now, this can be quite confusing because when we go to the book of the Revelation, often the beast is personified as a single person. He opens his mouth in blasphemies against God. He makes war with the saints. All the people on earth will worship him. In Revelation chapter 19, the beast and the false prophet are seized and the two are thrown into the lake of fire. They are individuals. But at other times, such as in Revelation chapter 17, the beast is describing the kingdom. The 10 horns of the beast are 10 kings who rule in the empire. Well, the point in referring to the king and the kingdom as the beast is that the king and the kingdom are one. These empires are not faceless institutions. It's not as if man is good, but the problem is this organizational structure called an empire. No, these empires are beasts because they represent the rule of certain beastly people. The beast is man. Man ruling autonomous from God. If men weren't fallen sinners, if men weren't the enemy of God, their governments would never become beasts. But in that these beasts run the government is a beast. Now, as most of you are well aware, Daniel's vision of these four beasts rising from the earth is the second vision of these coming empires. The first vision came to the pagan King Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel chapter 2, and he saw these four coming empires as a glorious statue of man. But when the prophet of God gets the same prophecy, Daniel sees the four coming empires as four beasts that will arise from the earth. And these beasts will devour, crush, and trample down. In Daniel chapter 7, the beasts utter great boasts. They wage war with God's people. They speak out against the Most High God. And they wear down the saints of the Highest One. So in the book of Daniel, we're seeing the difference between how the people of the world view big government and how the Christians view big government. People of the world see big government as a glorious expression of man's power and man. The bigger, the better. We see big government as the beast. The fall of the Roman Empire and its breakup into all of the countries of Europe was the result of the spread of Christian theology, the Christian worldview, the Christian culture. The glory and the power of the Roman Empire no longer had an appeal to a Christian citizenship because they looked to God and to Christ for their meaning, their security, their purpose. There was no longer any desire for emperor worship like you see in North Korea today. Now, if you study the writings of the philosophers, especially the pagan philosophers, they have never forgiven the Christians for the fall of the Roman Empire. They lost what they had in big government and have always sought to get it back. And that's the point in the prophecies of the Revelation. At the end of this age, in that humanity has abandoned God in the great apostasy, humanity naturally gravitates back toward big government. Big government is no longer despised or feared. It's actually worshipped. Revelation 13:4, they worship the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worship the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast and who is able to wage war with him?" Notice Satan receives worship when men worship government. And Revelation 13:8, all who dwell on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who has been slain. You know, we wonder why the left has such a love for big government. The power of big government, the control of big government. Now, they justify it with claims of charity and social responsibility, but they really can't explain why they always want the solution to big government. In reality, the attraction to the beast happens on a spiritual, subconscious level. You know, I've heard so many testimonies of those who say, "The day I received Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior was the day I changed my political affiliation." So please appreciate the political relevance of these texts in Revelation and Daniel. What's being prophesied is what we're seeing before our very eyes. The rise of statism and globalism in this world. People want the beast. People love the beast. They worship the beast. They want to find their meaning, their security, their purpose in the beast. Mark Levin, the political commentator, he has a new book out called American Marxism, and I need to do a program reviewing that book. It's all about the revolution taking place to turn America into a tyrannical communist state. And he's not making this up. Our generation of young people, the elites, the intellectuals, are strangely infatuated with the tenets of Marxism, the totalitarian state to make everything right. And the justifications are unbelievably deceptive. They believe their statism is economic and environmental justice, racial and gender equality, and they paint limited government and individual rights and responsibilities as unjust. It's really bizarre. It's Orwellian, you know, where war is peace and slavery is freedom. The whole argument undergirding Marxism is this promise of utopia, a better world than what we have been given through our founding fathers. A utopia where there will no longer be class warfare or racial divides, no oppression, no crime, no gender values or family values to get in our way. But what they're actually doing is deconstructing the good life for a life of misery. And that's 2 Peter 2:19. That's always their operation, promising them freedom while they themselves are slaves of corruption. This is definitely 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and Matthew 24, 24. There will be all deception of wickedness, and false prophets will arise so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. It's only those people who have a certain spiritual aptitude, a certain relationship with God, who will be able to see through the lies. But the majority of the unsaved humanity will be taken in by this deluding influence. Mark Levin, in his book, makes the following quote a number of times. Quote, of course, this formulation of traditional American principles as being oppressive is especially seductive to the malcontents, the disenchanted, the disaffected, the dissatisfied. For them, individual liberty and capitalism exposes their own shortcomings and failings, and their difficulty and perhaps inability to function in an open society. Marxism provides a theoretical and institutional framework through which they can project their own limitations and weaknesses onto the system and their oppressors, rather than take responsibility for their own real or perceived plight, unquote, Mark Levin. As one author I recently read said, well, man's universal reaction is always to blame others, even to blame God and his law. So how has America made it so long when America had a majority of Christian people with a Christian worldview, which used to be taught in public school and universities? The people were not taken in by Marxism because there wasn't the laziness, the complaining, the blame shifting. And the people were finding their security, their identity, not in humanity, not in the group, but in God. But now that biblical truth is being censored in education and in government, Marxism is the natural result. More simply said, when men abandon God, the government becomes their God. So that's the main reason why there's a growing desire for big government, statism, on the part of the voters. Now on the part of elite rulers, their motivation for big government is their quest for power, their need to be needed by others, the comfy job they can get and be relieved of the Genesis chapter 3 curse on work. They love what the beast can do for them. It feeds their pride. There are 10 million federal workers, and if you include everyone who works for government, from local bureaucrats, estate workers, teachers, police, it's somewhere in the area of 25 million people. Have you driven around the Beltway in Washington lately? They're building everywhere. The size of Washington is exploding. But that's not all. Notice how many people are getting some income from the federal government in terms of entitlements. Plus the businesses and the people who live off of government grants and contracts. Half of all Americans are receiving some sort of government benefit. Remember a number of years ago, Mitt Romney, he's running for president, and he said that there are 47% of the people who will vote for the Democrat president no matter what, because 40% of the population was living off of government largesse. Romney said, they depend on government. These people see themselves as victims and feel entitled to health care, to food, to housing, you name it, all courtesy of the government. They will vote for the current president no matter what. Well, although that was a stupid statement by Romney and he was broad brushing, he was still making a valid point. People want the beast to grow because they imagine that the beast is providing for them. And this is especially true when a citizenship lives on the basis of pragmatism rather than biblical principle, rather than the higher laws of God. Only a godly people will say, my security is not in a group but in God. I will not take from others. I must provide goods and services for myself. And that's Ephesians chapter 4. He who steals must no longer steal, but labor with his hands, so that he may have that which he can give to others. People would not walk into their neighbor's house and steal their stuff, but they wouldn't mind if the government does it for them. Now, I'm not saying that everybody who works for government is a freeloader, but when government oversteps its God-given boundaries and becomes a beast, a great number of government employees become unnecessary. So what I'm saying here is that when it comes to the world worshiping the beast, money, short-term gain is a big factor. Do you know what this $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill is all about? This bill that the Democrats are trying to get passed? With everything else going on, the Afghanistan crisis, the border crisis, the vaccine mandates, this $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill has gone under the radar. I think people know more about Gabby Petito than they know about this bill. It's the government spending, what will be created by printing more dollars, by inflating the money supply. It is the words of Margaret Thatcher coming to fruition when she said the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money. Well, we've run out of money, but the statists still want to grow the beast. And so they will print dollars like some third world country in order to maintain the size and the influence of the federal government. You know, this is how dedicated they are to the beast. They wouldn't even consider that the solution is to shrink the size of the beast. No, they must hire more and more workers, give out more grants and contracts, because that's the source of their power. What's in this bill? Well, there are huge tax increases on the oil industry. It will create a government climate corps. Quote, the Civilian Climate Corps for Jobs and Justice Act would carry a $70 billion price tag between 2021 and 2025, according to a press release. Ocasio-Cortez and Markey's bill would hire a group of 1.5 million young Americans to complete federally funded projects that help communities respond to climate change and transition to a clean economy. The bill would guarantee salaries between $25,000 and $50,000 for core members. Well, it's a bunch of climate change brown shirts. What else is in the bill? Citizenship for illegal immigrants, free child care and secondary education, $726 billion slated to go toward various programs like child care, pre-K, and tuition-free community college. And the bill is $332 billion toward government subsidies for low-income and affordable housing. And the list of handouts goes on and on. This is a 2,700-page bill. And this is happening when politicians know that the government cannot afford these expenditures. The federal government is already spending more than it takes in, but that is not stopping these politicians. They love the beast. The bill would increase the yearly federal deficit from $1.3 trillion to $1.8 trillion, and the national debt would double by 2031 and be at $45 trillion. But they don't care about the debt. They don't care about devaluing the dollar as long as they can spend. They want this power. Quote from one commentator, in the current era, the socialist transformation of America has accelerated at a truly frightening and unprecedented rate, with expenditures of sums of money not comprehensible by mortal man. Well said. Well, this is all on the side. The point I want us to say is that Christians are up against the beast, and the beast is the government of man. Again, Revelation chapter 13, this beast is often interpreted to mean the Antichrist, but the beast is also the empire itself. And the image of the beast that everyone is required to honor is most likely an insignia of the empire. Yes, there will actually be an Antichrist who is called the beast, but the empire and the leadership is one. And the people worship the beast because they're actually worshiping themselves, mankind, the power of man expressed through government. At the beginning of David Kepelian's book, How Evil Works, I started reading this again the other day. It's such a good book. He has a chapter entitled, In Government We Trust, Why We Elect Liars as Leaders. And he writes this, did you ever stop to wonder why most governments, no matter where on earth you look, or what time period you consider, they tend toward being tyrannical and predatory? I'm not referring just to those unfortunate nations suffering under open, brutal dictatorships. Even here in the West, where we elect our governments, they portray themselves as benevolent and democratic. Somehow, they still always end up taxing, legislating, and regulating us to servitude. Why? Why is it that government just about always ends up playing God and controlling our lives? Then Kepelian goes on to illustrate tyrannies such as in Iraq. If you criticize the government under Saddam Hussein, you would have your tongue cut out. And that was to dissuade others from criticizing the government. In North Korea, Kim Jong-il is to be called their dear leader. Every citizen is a slave of the state. If you're caught with a radio, you'll be imprisoned for life. In Zimbabwe, the communist Robert Mugabe became the prime minister, and the government confiscated the people's property, and the nation went into abject poverty and famine. Inflation was 11,000,000%. In China, there is at least 500,000 political prisoners. In Russia, there's no freedom of the press, no human rights. And in the 45 Muslim countries in this world, there's also tyrannical dictatorships. Almost every government in the world is a beast. And why have these countries gravitated toward tyranny? And why in the United States has the federal government grown into a massive parasitic entity? Well, political commentators give many peripheral answers, but Kepelian ends his book with the core reason given by the best theologians. This is all about a shared ungodly worldview, namely that government is a substitute for God. Therefore, government is the solution to all of our problems. When we disobey God, our lives go badly. But rather than turning back to God, we turn to something else. Government. The combined power of man. And we hope that government will free us from all of those personal responsibilities and accountabilities that God expects from us. Government becomes a substitute for the rule of Christ. Unsaved man wants the rule of man. As they said of Christ, we will not have this man rule over us, and we have no king but Caesar. Now, that's why the future world leader is called the Antichrist. But those who make the choice for man will pay a terrible price because man is a cruel God. Recently, we were all disappointed in Larry Elder losing the California governor race. And it really boggles our mind that the people of California can put up with the high taxes and the draconian policies of their politicians. But you have to realize what's going on. They don't like the foolish policies of Newsom or the ineptitude of Joe Biden. But they love their abortion. They love their LGBTQ and their government entitlements. And that is what they're really voting on. They don't want the Christian values of Larry Elder. And they would rather put up with the ineptitude and the slavery of the system as long as they can have their immorality. And that's why a country descends into tyranny, because they love the wages of unrighteousness. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15. Again, the words of the prophet Jeremiah, which speak to our day, Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 31. The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests rule by their own authority, and my people love it so. Notice also Isaiah chapter 30, verse 10. The people say to the seer, you must not see visions, and to the prophets, you must not prophesy to us what is right. Speak to us pleasant words. Prophesy illusions. Get out of the way. Turn aside from the path. Let us hear no more about the Holy One of Israel. And Micah chapter 2, verse 11. If a man walk after wind and falsehood, has told lies and said, I will speak out to you concerning wine and liquor, he would be the spokesman to this people. In other words, he is the one the people will elect. So notice all of these texts are about lies. To quote again from Kupelian, when all is said and done, we elect liars as leaders because we need lies, and we need lies because we're running from the truth. When we're in rebellion against the true God, we need lies and deception to maintain our illusions. And the people who love power are all too eager to step up and play that role for us. Bad governments need lies. Lies do a great job of excusing their failings and validating their illusions. Unquote. So throughout Kupelian's chapter on government tyranny, he goes off speaking about the lies of politicians. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, listen, stay on the subject. You're supposed to be talking about government tyranny, not political lying. But they are so closely related that you cannot refer to the one without referring to the other. And this is really biblical, because in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, when the Apostle Paul writes about the world embracing the government of the Antichrist, where the beast displays himself as being God, Paul constantly refers to lies. Verse 9, lying signs and wonders. Verse 10, because they did not receive the love of the truth. Verse 11, so they will believe what is false. Verse 12, who did not believe the truth. Paul writes this because the beast comes to power through lies, and the people embrace the lies. And what did we read in the news this week? The Biden administration was lying about deporting illegal Haitian immigrants in Del Rio. They're secretly being released into the United States. The Biden administration actually had the FAA pass a ruling that no drones can fly over Del Rio because they don't want the pictures to get out. This is something that communist countries do. And new documents show that Fauci lied. He did fund gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab. Well, the purpose of today's program is really not to talk about the lies of politicians, but to remind Christians that we're up against the beast. So don't be surprised if Christians find themselves in a moral, ideological battle with the state. In the Revelation, it is the global government of man that will be persecuting the church. Daniel chapter 7, the beast will wear down the saints of the highest one. And notice how this conflict plays out in the book of Daniel. The example that we're given of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The beast, the empire of man, is seen by man as being a huge statue of man. So Nebuchadnezzar builds a huge statue or image of gold. And it's probably the image of the man he saw in his dream. And the king requires everyone in this kingdom to bow down to that image. Do you realize what's being said and done here? This is about more than simple idolatry. This is the operation of the state, eventually requiring everyone to do homage to the state, to worship the state, to revere the state. And notice in the story, when it comes time to bow down to the state, everyone goes along with it. Daniel chapter 3, verse 3, then the satraps and the prefects and the governors and the counselors and the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces were assembled for the dedication of the image. And this list of people is given twice to show how this symbol was universally accepted by everyone. Because who is going to bite the hand that feeds them? And who is going to go against the power of government? So everyone bows down except three young Jewish men who put God before the state. And notice how quickly the people are to turn them in. Verse 12, there are certain Jews who do not worship the golden image you have set up. Dissent is not tolerated. Remember Revelation chapter 13, verse 14? He tells those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. And he causes as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So nothing has really changed. The unsaved still want mankind to be on the throne and expect everyone to worship the expression of man's power, the state. And notice the reaction of King Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 3, verse 19. He was filled with wrath because this wasn't simply about a statue. These three followers of God were undermining the worldview of these status, their source of identity, their power. But these three young men, even though they were against the entire population, would not support the beast. Let it be known to you, O king, that we're not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Again, this is not simply about a prohibition on idolatry. This is God's people standing opposed to the state usurping its proper place. And in the book of the Revelation, the Christians are taking the same stand against the statism to come, Revelation chapter 12, verse 11, and they overcame him, Satan and the beast, because of the blood of the Lamb, because of the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives, even when faced with death. Why? Because we're the servants of God, not man. We're citizens of God's kingdom. We must obey God rather than men. Remember Tanner Cross, the physical education teacher in Virginia, who was suspended after he explained at a board meeting why his religious convictions prevented him from using transgender pronouns. The Supreme Court in Virginia reinstated him, but the school is still firing him. But what's telling is that in his lawsuit against the school, only two other teachers are joining him in the lawsuit. There should have been hundreds of teachers joining that lawsuit, but only three. Because people will put their own welfare above the truth. The University of Pennsylvania has told students that actions could be taken against them if they do not respect their classmates' preferred pronouns. Of course, this is coming from the university's Office of Equity and Inclusion. So this is coming for you and me. Notice in Revelation chapter 13, in the text about the mark of the beast, we read something very peculiar. It's not that you're put to death if you don't take the mark of the beast. It's just that you can't buy or sell. Your livelihood is taken away from you. And that's all it takes for most people to go along with the agenda of the beast. If you'll not lose your job for Jesus, don't ever think that you'll lay your life down for Jesus. So, in conclusion, remember the end of the beast. The vision includes a great stone falling upon and crushing the statue of man. Daniel chapter 2, verse 44. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all of these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. Inasmuch as you saw a stone cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, and the silver and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future. So the dream is true, and its interpretation is trustworthy. And in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel's vision, the Ancient of Days takes his seat and the beast is slain. And in Revelation chapter 17, the beast goes toward destruction. And all of chapter 18 is about the fall of Babylon the Great, the fall of the city of man. So be warned if you follow the beast. Be encouraged if you're a follower of Christ. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for including this YouTube channel as just one part of your discipleship in the Word. Don't forget to subscribe, to share, to like, to leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.